Today, the Jobless Recovery, the DFA Daily to the 6th of July, 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour and with a little philosophy on the side. Before we start, a quick reminder that on Tuesday, the 7th of July at 8pm Sydney, we'll be running our next live stream. We'll be updating our mortgage and rental stress estimates for June and also do a deep dive into investor property stress, probably the key to the whole market. You can ask a question live, and yes, I will have my postcode database online, so I'll see you then. The Victorian border with New South Wales will be closed from Tuesday night following talks between Premiers Daniel Andrews and Gladys Berejiklian and Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Mr Andrews said Victoria recorded 127 new coronavirus cases overnight and a man in his 90s has died in a Victorian hospital overnight. The Victorian Premier said the three leaders agreed closing the border would be the smart call at this point in time. The closures will be enforced on the New South Wales side so as not to be a drain on resources that are very much focused on fighting the virus right now across our state, Mr. Andrews said. The decision follows a weekend that saw Victoria record 108 new cases on Saturday, the second highest increase in the state in a single day since the pandemic began, and lockdown of 9 public housing estates in inner Melbourne in a bid to contain an outbreak of the virus. Another 74 virus cases were recorded in the state yesterday. The Premier said of today's 127 new cases, 16 were detected in the public housing towers that have been locked down. But of course, the broader question is, what does this do to the local economy and business confidence? Well, in June 2020, Roy Morgan business confidence was up 5.1 points, or 5.7%, to 95, led by increases in Western Australia, New South Wales and Queensland. Business confidence in June is now virtually level with its March result of 95.1 during the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic and shutdowns. The good news in June is that for the first time in 2020, a majority of businesses at 50.2% said that the next year will be a good time to invest in growing the business, compared to only 40.4% that said it would be a bad time to invest. That's the lowest so far in 2020. In addition, nearly half of all businesses, 48.3%, said they expect their business will be better off financially this time next year compared to only 21.1% that expect it to be worse off. And overall, the June 2020 business confidence level is 19.7 percentage points lower than the level it was a year ago and 19.2 points below the long-term average of 114.2. The biggest increases were in Western Australia, with an increase of 8.3%, New South Wales up 10.1%, and Queensland up 14.6%. In contrast, business confidence is now lagging below the national average in Victoria, which has suffered a renewed outbreak since mid-June, and its two neighbours, Tasmania and South Australia. Business confidence in June was up significantly in many industries, with 8 industries now having a positive rating above 100, compared to 6 in May and only 2 in April. Public administration and defence now has the highest business confidence of any industry, 127.8, following an increase of 13.6% in June. This industry, which is based on government funding, is the only industry not to dip below the neutral level of 100. Another industry to rebound strongly in June is accommodation and food services, which suffered during 2020 from first the summer bushfires and then COVID-19. Confidence in this industry is increased up 53.5% in June as lockdown restrictions began to be lifted and Australians began to take domestic holidays while international travel is still banned. Other industries in positive territory above 100 include wholesale trade, postal and warehousing, agriculture, information, media and telecommunications, community services, and education and training. Now, of course, the question is, what's going to happen to the broader Australian economy? Well, according To one set of experts, the Australian economy will bounce out of the coronavirus recession, but it will be a jobless turnaround. New forecasts suggest with real wages likely to fall until the middle of the decade and government debt to breach $1 trillion, according to a report in the SMH. Ahead of the Reserve Bank's monthly board meeting, at which official rates are expected to remain at a record low of 0.25%, Deloitte Access Economics said it could be years before mortgage holders would have to worry about an increase in their costs. The Morrison government is preparing an economic statement to be delivered by Treasurer Josh Frydenberg on July the 23rd, with that expected to show the economy suffering its deepest recession since the 1930s and the budget on track for its largest deficit on record. Deloitte Access is forecasting the economy to contract by 0.4% through 2021 after shrinking by 0.1% in 2019-20. That would be the first time the economy had suffered 2 years of negative growth since the early 1980s recession. But after that, the firm expects the economy to grow by 5.3% in 2021-22 and then 4% the following year. After big falls in 2021, private consumption, housing construction and private investment are also expected to lift. The forecasts hinge on the nation's borders being reopened and the discovery of a vaccine for the virus, neither of which, of course, are certainties. Government spending will hold up the economy in the meantime, with it to grow 6.5% this year after a surge of 6% in 2019-20. The budget deficit for the just completed financial year is now on track for a record $90 billion, with Deloitte expecting public debt to reach $1 trillion by 2024. Last week, it hit an all-time high of $691.3 billion. Deloitte partner Chris Richardson said the economy would benefit from the way the coronavirus has been controlled. The recession may well be already past its worst, he said. Even so, families are struggling with the toxic trio of high debt, high unemployment, and low confidence, and 2020 is a shocker of a year. The ranks of the unemployed will be badly swollen for a while. The firm expects unemployment to average 8.2% in the current financial year, and even by 24-25, Deloitte is forecasting the jobless rate will still be above its previous virus low of 5.1%. Wage growth is tipped to lag inflation out to 24-25, with full-time employment to grow slower than part-time jobs for several years. And over the entire period, interest rates are not expected to move. Mr. Richardson said one of the biggest headwinds will be the lack of population growth. The government is expecting net overseas migration to collapse by up to 85% in 2021. And Deloitte said this would translate into 250,000 fewer people living permanently in the country, a shortfall that would affect the economy for years. Because we take more migrants than most, Australia's overall population growth has been high, and our population hasn't aged as fast as others either, as our migrants are relatively young. But that flow of migrants has now all but been turned off. That hurts tourism and education immediately, and it also weighs on recovery, affecting everything from housing construction to the utilities. And Victoria is likely to take the unwanted title of worst performing state through the COVID crisis. Population, once a key growth engine, has well and truly stalled, and Victoria's case numbers were spiking as we went to press. The need for tighter restrictions has sent job losses soaring and consumers hanging on to their cash rather than spending it. And infrastructure is the bright spot in this dark near-term outlook until the economy can open back up. Meantime, our economy is held together by lots of sticky tape, and actually that's truly great news. JobKeeper and JobSeeker are the standouts, but a whole range of policies have swung into action to cushion our living standards. And Australia's ability to do that was made easier both economically and politically by our relatively strong position. The federal budget was balanced and debt was low when the crisis hit. Well, of course, public debt, yes. Private debt now. In the meantime, Bloomberg says economists are divided on the outlook for Australia's recovery. Many see a U-shape, while a growing number see a W-shaped recovery. Both support the central bank's view that interest rates will remain low for a long time. The Reserve Bank of Australia is set to keep its cash rate and three-year target at 0.25% on Tuesday's policy meeting, and Governor Philip Lowe's focus will then turn to the government's July 23rd economic and fiscal statement that will set out plans for ongoing stimulus. The shape of the recovery will be first and foremost determined by consumer confidence, says Xianyu Chan, a senior economist at St. George Bank, who expects it will be U-shaped. Financial market participants see a high chance of a W-shaped recovery due to elevated concerns about a second wave of infections and the end of key stimulus measures. An audience poll during Bloomberg's Inside Track webinar series showed a similar divide, with 41% of respondents expecting the Australian economic recovery to be U-shaped, while 34% saw a W-shaped path. And Australia's optimism following the earlier relaxation of the COVID-19 lockdown and the reopening of the economy has been tempered by a renewed outbreak in the southern state of Victoria, which has seen restrictions reinstated for isolated areas. A whole lot of businesses wouldn't be sustained a second time through. A lot of households wouldn't be sustained a second time through. And the government could not be as generous, RBA board member Ian Harper said in an interview last month. And if you add on top of that the devastating impact that it would have on public confidence, that's the one that really bothers me. And the central bank scooped up more than 50 billion Aussie dollars of government securities of varying maturities in the weeks after an emergency meeting in March, as it tried to soothe dislocated markets and lower borrowing costs. It hasn't bought anything further since early May, as the three-year bond yield remains above its target. And the RBA has been urging the government to maintain stimulus support beyond September, when programs like its wage subsidy to keep workers tied to employers, higher unemployment payments and other support measures are due to expire. The fear is that the economy could be set back badly if some of these programs aren't extended. If there were no tapering, and for whatever reason the government decided just to let it stop, then I think we haven't seen the peak in unemployment, Harper said. Australia's jobless rate advanced to 7.1% in May, and the Treasury expects it to reach 8% this quarter, although, as we've already highlighted, those are rather flexed rates and don't really represent the full state of play. And retail is still at risk. The AFR reported that a radical reshaping of retailing will be unleashed by the fallout from the coronavirus, as national retailers pare store numbers, setting up a showdown between e-commerce and the country's premier malls for control of 85% of Australia's consumer spending. It's a vision of the future retailing landscape that key global investor portfolio manager Chris Bedingfield said will lead to a sharp division of shopping mall owners into two distinct groups, the best and the rest. The old business model of having 100 stores across the country, that's not the future, he says. The future is going to be around 20-odd stores, maybe 25 stores, in 20 to 25 of the best locations in the country, where you have high visibility of your product, supporting your brand, supporting your customers, and then the rest of your sales will be online. He says online and the top 20 shopping malls each account for about 7% of retail sales, which should translate into a greater share of consumer spending as less well-positioned malls get the cold shoulder from leading retailers. Everyone says it's all online. That's fine. I think it is, he says. But there's the other side of the equation, which is the top 20 to 25 shopping centres in the country. They're going to dominate just as much because retailers are going to still keep some physical stores and they're going to be in the best locations. And he said he had placed a 5 to 10 year time frame on the retail market evolving as he envisioned, but in a post-virus world, he sees the change coming in the next 3 to 5 years. And research from Westpac has illuminated how COVID-19 restrictions have shaped what Australians want most in their next home, as people have had time to reflect on how their living space could better meet their needs moving forward. Perhaps most notably, Australian homeowners are less likely to prefer high-density living in a post-pandemic world, with more than three-quarters saying they would now prefer to live in a house because of COVID-19. For many of us, staying home for an extended period has changed how we use the space we live in, whether that's homeschooling from the kitchen table or setting up a makeshift office in the lounge room, said Anthony Hughes, Westpac Managing Director of Mortgages. Our research suggests that this has started a behavioural shift in what Australians want in a home, with people now seeking more space outdoors, proximity to parks and beaches, and even larger properties of those surveyed. A third, around 34%, indicated they want to live somewhere less populated. One in three, 31%, would like to live closer to either parks or shops, and one in five, at 20%, are now seeking suburbs with larger properties. We are also seeing people wanting their homes to cater for both their professional and personal lives, with one in five Australians wanting a separate study as more businesses adapt to working remotely, he said. As such, having a separate study area at 20% and large kitchen at 15% sat high on the list of future criteria for outdoor spaces. Features such as a spacious backyard at 27% and entertainment area at 18% are now considered more important in light of the virus. With the government's recently announced home builder grants, we expect more Australians will be considering a major renovation to upgrade their home to better meet their needs, or even starting a new home build to cater for their changing lifestyle, he said. And the Federal Chamber of Automotive Industries has released its new car sales report for June, which saw annual car sales collapse to their lowest level since January 2010. There was, however, a slight uptick in new vehicle sales during June 2020, with a total of 110,234 vehicles sold during the month. While this represents a decrease of 6.4% over June 2019, it's the strongest result since the beginning of the COVID-19 crisis, which saw March sales down 17.9%, April sales down 48.5%, and May sales down 35.3%. FCAI Chief Executive Tony Webber attributed the slight recovery to the easing of COVID-19 restrictions, seasonality, the extension of the federal government's instant asset write-off scheme, and brand and dealer proactivity. Some states have seen the easing of COVID-19 restrictions, and this has increased floor traffic through dealerships, he said. In addition, June is traditionally a very strong month for new vehicle sales. The end of the financial year campaigns are well known, so it's an excellent time for businesses and consumers to replace their vehicles. The extension of the government's instant asset write-off scheme has also been a positive influence, and this program allows businesses to bring forward tax deductions for eligible expenditure. Despite these green shoots, June represents the 27th consecutive month of decreasing sales for the automotive industry, a fact which, over time, has been attributed to a number of environmental, political, financial, and health issues within the Australian market. And just remember that car imports hit a 10.5-year low in May. Many car yards will simply not survive. Extremely loose monetary policy will be required for a long time to support growing debt levels worldwide, buoying liquidity along with global equity and bond prices, according to JP Morgan Chase. More debt, more liquidity, more asset reflation was the conclusion strategists who forecast a $16 trillion increase in worldwide debt this year, and that would push the combination of private and public sector debt to a record high of $200 trillion by the year end. That will lead to higher savings rates, very accommodative central bank policies, and more cash in the system, the bulk of which may find its way into the global stock market, they wrote in a note on Friday. Elevated cash holdings create a strong background support for non-cash assets such as bonds and equities. And they also said, given the current low level of bond yields, most of this liquidity will eventually be deployed into equities as the need for precautionary savings subsides over time. US money supply has ramped up this year. The increase in global liquidity during the coronavirus crisis has happened at a much swifter pace than during the 2008 downturn. Total money creation could exceed $15 trillion or more by the middle of next year as quantitative easing continues at a stronger than normal level, the strategist wrote. And in the US, M2 money supply has risen $3 trillion so far this year to $18.4 trillion. According to the Federal Reserve data compiled by Bloomberg. And finally, Goldman Sachs economists revised down their estimates for the US economy this quarter, but predicted it will be back on track in September after some states imposed fresh restrictions to combat the virus. While consumer spending appears likely to stall this month and next, they said other economists have proved it's possible to resume activity, and changes in behavior such as wearing masks will help too. A combination of tighter state regulations and voluntary social distancing is already having a noticeable impact on economic activity, they said in a report on Saturday. The Economist said that they now expect the economy to grow 25% in the third quarter, having previously predicted 33%. That will result in the economy slumping 4.6% this year, worse than the 4.2% previously seen. But the Goldman Sachs economists said they were still expected growth of 5.8% next year and now project unemployment at 9% at the end of this year, down from its previous estimate of 9.5%. But of course, that's a very high number compared to where we were before the virus hit. And the point I want to make is that all these assumptions about the future are predicated on an assumption with regard to the virus being controlled or going away. If that doesn't happen, then I'm afraid all bets are off. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.